So we'll be talking about in-season, in-rate decisions. Just want to make sure you're awake and you're all asleep. Okay, the coffee is out there if you want. Soil nitrate versus crop color. Peter.
Thank you, Dave. It's actually pronounced scarf. My family has a weird, gotten the German wrong. I don't know why. But I want to thank Dave for organizing this symposium. I thought it was a really good idea. It's comparison of in-season nitrogen application management strategies, and there's lots of research being done on that. And I wish there were more talks in this symposium, but I'm really honored to be in the same session with Kevin and David. So I'm going to talk about a couple of different sets of experiments that we've done, and I'll focus to some extent on comparison between soil nitrate and crop color, and this is the sensor-based nutrient management community that's sponsoring this, and so that'll clearly be a pretty substantial part of it, but I'm really just looking at that bigger picture that Dave brought in of how do you compare these different systems and how do they perform and how do they work. But one of the advantages of in-season nitrogen, and there are several, but one advantage is you've got a better shot at getting the rate right. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is that if you're doing a soil test as your diagnostic, a soil test farther into the season is going to account for some of the things that have happened with soil nitrogen up to that date, which may include mineralization. It could include some loss of the soil-derived or fertilizer nitrogen. Crop color can be used, which obviously can't use with the pre-plant type of management. And weather data can be integrated. And we've gotten more simulation models coming into the scene. The opportunity for them to use that weather data and say, okay, this year is different than last year in a way that will help us manage our nitrogen better is there. So I'll start off by talking about what I'm calling a long-term systems experiment, but it's not that long-term. It's been we started that in 2007, and it is no-till continuous corn, and it has 8 timing and rate systems, and this is a view taken from a lift truck to give you some idea of what it looks like. So they're standard small plots, 10 feet by 50 feet, I think, and this picture was taken in, late July or early August of 2010. It was a very wet spring for us, and some of the treatments are written on there, and you can see even the 180 pre-plant rate looks a little bit peaked, and that was because a bunch of that nitrogen was lost before this photo was taken. So going back to the treatment list, I'm going to start off talking about just the fact that there are 4 pre-plant treatments, just a low, high, and medium, which is at a rate that's our MRTN rate, for those of you who know what that means, and if you don't, that's fine. And also a pre-plant soil nitrate test is in there, and then we have 3 in-season nitrogen systems, one based on the pre-side dress or late spring, if a little nod to Fred Blackmer, he liked to call it the late spring soil nitrate test. And so I'm using the guidelines that he first came up with for interpretation to get a rate. And then we've got a treatment with a canopy sensor, and the interpretation that we use is one that we developed and didn't publish independently, but published in a manuscript about doing on-farm trials with the ACS 210. And then a chlorophyll meter interpreted according to some research that was done by a group of us, and that has a large multi-state data set that I'll be talking more about. So that's where that interpretation came from. And what I'm showing you here is cumulative yield. And so you can see that they spread out quite a bit after 7 years. The zero nitrogen obviously stands out, and this is not like Kevin's talk or the previous one of the grad students where there was really, you know, very little response to nitrogen. There's a huge response to nitrogen here where we're going from 300 bushels of cumulative yield with no nitrogen to about 1,050 with the highest yielding treatment, so 3.5 times higher due to nitrogen management over that period. The 4 that are grouped in the middle are the 4 pre-plant treatments, and the 3 that are at the top are the 3 side dress treatments. So right off the top, there is a huge difference in performance in this experiment between the pre-plant and the side dress. And this is 100%. There's no split in any of these. It's either 100% pre or 100% side dress. And so there's nearly 200 bushel cumulative difference between the best pre-plant treatment and the worst side dress treatment. And then you just take the averages, the average pre-plant and the average side dress, and you're at more like 300 bushel difference over those 7 years. So a huge timing difference. Why did that happen? Because of the 7 years where we have yield, we had five wet springs that caused a lot of loss of the nitrogen between when it was applied before planting and when the crop really needed it in June and July, from, say, waist high up until a couple weeks after tassel, which is the maximum uptake time. So there's that huge timing effect overlaying the thing that Dave asked us to talk about, which is how do you make these in-season decisions, and what are the strengths and weaknesses of some different approaches. So I'm going to focus in on these two treatments, the pre-side dress soil nitrate test as compared to a rate based on a canopy sensor, and talk a little bit about those. This shows you the 7 years of data and the yields with each of those two treatments over that 7 year period. And we went from some pretty poor yields in 2012 to some darn good yields for us in 2013, and all the other years were in between. But what you'll notice is the red line is always equal to or higher than the blue line. The red line is the reflectance-based nitrogen rate, and the blue line is based on the pre-side dress soil test interpreted according to the Iowa State recommendations. And I don't have it written on here, but for those of you who have at least a little bit of familiarity with it, you take the measured, the difference between 25 part per million and what you measured, and multiply by 8 and get your nitrogen rate. So in the first year, there was a fair amount of nitrate in the soil. The sensors saw the plants looking pretty good. The nitrogen rates were pretty low, 50 for side dress nitrate test and 82 with the chlorophyll meter. Not the chlorophyll meter, the canopy sensor, which is pretty low for 150 bushel yields. And we had some of that nitrogen coming out of the soil, like Kevin saw and like the Kansas State students saw, Ashley, I think. But the 50 was not enough. When we went to 82, we got 17 extra bushels, which is a fairly substantial yield difference. I'm just showing you the yield differences where it was at least 10 bushels per acre or more. And the next time that happened was in 2010, and it took about an extra 50 pounds of nitrogen with the sensor. And you notice that the nitrogen recommendation for both systems is much higher in 2010 than it was in 2007. And part of that was it was not only a wet year, it was the third wet year in a sequence. So a lot of the soil nitrogen had been lost. In 2013, there was an 11 bushel difference between them and about 40 extra pounds from the sensor-based system. And in 2014, there was a 16 bushel advantage to the sensor-based system. The sensor actually, on average, put out less nitrogen than the soil test-based system, but the yield advantage for the sensor all accrued in plots with a nitrogen rate of greater than 130 pounds. So there were two plots where the sensor said, hey, these are short, they need extra nitrogen, and they did, and they well out-yielded the putting on the rate based on the soil test. And then the other plots, rates were pretty low, and that worked out fine, and so we ended up with a lower total usage, but still winning in yield based on the places where we did put on more. So if you look at the cumulative for just those two, we've got 75 extra bushels of yield using the sensor-based nitrogen recommendations over 7 years compared to using the side dress soil nitrate test. And we had to use 163 extra pounds of nitrogen to get that. 75 bushels with 163 pounds is not great efficiency, but when you look at the overall performance of the canopy sensor, it was pretty much 1-to-1. That took 1 pound of nitrogen to make 1 bushel of corn, and that's pretty good efficiency. And so as an overall system, it was reasonably good, and I would rather, if I was a farmer, use that system than use the side dress soil nitrate system for several reasons. And one is that extra nitrogen that I spent using that system cost me $90, and the yield that I got back made me $300. And even though the efficiency wasn't as high as it could have been, it's really hard to tell a farmer that they shouldn't spend $90 to make $300. And if we want them to do something different, we need to make it worth their while, is my opinion. So summing that up, for 7 years, the canopy sensor was at least 10 bushels per acre higher yield than when we based our rate on the side dress soil test. And it was always due to having a higher rate, which is not surprising with corn because you almost never get higher yield by putting on a lower rate with corn. And so we were regularly left short when we based our rate on the side dress soil test. Now, I'm going to give you a few other contexts. The first is I haven't seen anyone show in a large data set that the soil nitrate test was doing a good job of choosing nitrogen rate for corn. And probably part of that is just weather variability. And there are some adjustments in that test for interpretation based on weather. Certainly there's a lot of small data sets out there where it's worked well, but the one I'm going to show you, it did not. And actually, I don't know of any other larger data sets that are out there to test my statement on. But my other thing is that even if it's accurate, it's too clunky for variable rate, and I'm a believer that we need to be doing variable rate, that there's a real physical reason out there in the world to do that. So I'll hit those one at a time. The first is this data set from 64 fields in 7 states. It's a North Central research group that did this amazing job of collecting data with a common protocol and then didn't do as much with it as we should have. But if you look at those 64 sites and what happened with that pre-side dress soil nitrate measured to a 30 centimeter or 1 foot depth, there is a relationship that the more nitrate that was there, the lower the optimal rate for the crop, but it's pretty weak. R squared is 0.16. And you just can't see anything here that would suggest that you'd be able to go out there and really improve nitrogen management based on this test, looking at this data set. But for reference, the recommendation that Iowa State gives is shown by that red line. That's how they would interpret the test in a not especially wet year. If the year is wet, you would drop that sum. This data was taken over a period when there wasn't a lot of excessively wet years represented in the data set. But for whatever reason, on average, the amount of nitrogen that was actually needed at these experimental fields was less than what the test would say. And you remember that in my long-term test, it was actually more than what the test said. But when you look at the amount of scatter around either line, you can see it could easily happen either way, that you're going to get places that need more, places that need less, and it's just not that accurate. In the same set of 64 experiments with our relative chlorophyll meter reading, we got R squared of 0.54, which is no great shakes, but I don't know of anything that's better. And compared to 0.16, it's a huge improvement. So you can actually get something, I believe, out of a relationship like this in terms of making a recommendation that's better than what you're going to do otherwise. So I think that that the data is out there to show that, in general, over large amounts of data, that a color-based system is going to give you a lot better recommendation than a soil-based system. Now, if we had color-based, and one of our treatments is a chlorophyll meter, which is a little handheld device that clamps onto a leaf, it would be really hard to do variable rate nitrogen with that because of the intensity of work required to get spatial data with it. Does that matter? And this is an experiment that we did in central Missouri. Each of those little colored rectangles is a independent rate response experiment. And there are about 70 or 80 of them, I can't remember. And the one in the southeast corner, I've highlighted and I'm showing you the rate response experiment there. And we got about 100 bushels with zero nitrogen. We went up to about 150 with nitrogen. And it took about 140 to get us to the place where we were just almost at full yield and not going to make any more money by applying more nitrogen. So the optimal rate there was 140. That's color-coded as yellow. Anything from 120 to 160 is color-coded as yellow, and that's the rate the farmer was using. It was right in the middle of that. So each of those colored rectangles a separate rate response experiment, and the outcome of that rate response experiment was that the rate the farmer was using was pretty darn good if it's coded as yellow. But if it's coded as pink, the farmer's rate was too low, and if it's coded as red, the farmer's rate was way too low. If it's coded as green, the farmer's rate was too high, and if it's coded as blue, the farmer's rate was way too high. So, you know, there's a pretty substantial amount, probably 20% of that field that needed less than 80, and nearly another 20% that needed more than 200. And so a very wide divergence, and if you put on the farmer's rate, you were over-fertilizing a whole bunch of that field and under-fertilizing a whole bunch of it. And we studied 8 fields this way, quite widely distributed around the state, and we found that 7 were as variable as this field. And not only was there a lot of variability around whatever the mean in the field was, the means were very different from field to field. And the field where the least nitrogen was needed, the average of all those colored rectangles was 65. And the field where the most was needed, the average of all the colored rectangles was 200. So, but in each of those fields, there was a lot of variability around that central tendency. We're not the first ones to do this. In fact, we're in the home of the first ones to do this. Gary Mauser did some very nice work with his team on this before we did it, and we were kind of inspired by that. And he found that, yes, there was quite a bit of variability across the landscape and how much nitrogen was needed. Oops. John Schmidt did some nice work in both Kansas and then Pennsylvania with similar outcomes. Larry Bundy did some good experiments at Wisconsin and did not find much variability and how much was needed. And I haven't seen anyone work on this in 6 or 8 years, even though the data that we have is not really enough to really say what the situation is in the way that it would be good to say it. But the evidence that we have is that in general, there's a wide variability across the field, and the question is, how can we address that? How can we put the right rate in the right place? And so we did do zone soil nitrate samples in these fields, and over those 8 fields, we did it both pre-plant and pre-side dress, and we found that it just did not help us out in doing a better job of deciding where to put the nitrogen. Our zones were the soil map units. So, getting down to using color and then that long-term experiment, we had both the canopy sensor and the chlorophyll meter, and over those 7 years, performance was about equal. We actually did a little bit better with the chlorophyll meter in that cumulative yield over 7 years was 35 bushels higher. It took about 140 extra pounds of nitrogen to do that. That's still profitable. The statistics are a little shaky, not real ironclad. And even if they were, you know, that's getting to the point where I am now ready to say, you know, that's not enough of a win to overcome both the potential negative environmental impact and the inconvenience of managing with the handheld meter. Because I think that really the case I've just made is that you've got to be able to go intensively across the field and find the places that need more and the places that need less. And you can do that with this meter that's sitting up there on the front of the applicator, and you can't really do it. I mean, you can do it with the handheld meter, but it's so labor intensive that no one probably will do it. And so I see the reflectance sensors as having a lot more upside. And I've heard Dave say I haven't heard him say it to farmer groups, but I read another quote somewhere. He says, in 20 years, you're all going to be doing this. Is that correct quote, Dave?
That is,
yeah. So I pretty much share his view on that. So my wrap-up, crop color was a lot better than soil nitrate in predicting how much nitrogen to put out in 2 data sets that I have access to. One of them is quite large and over multiple states and years. We, in our long-term experiment, had a huge advantage to side dress timing over pre-plant, and that was because we had a lot of wet years in that string of years. We found that optimal fertilizer rate varies widely across fields, and because of that, I think we can get a good rate out of either canopy reflectance sensor or a handheld color meter or a SPAD chlorophyll meter, but because we need to be able to vary across fields and put the right rate in the right place, the reflectance sensors are going to win based on that. I do think that aerial photos and satellite images offer the same potential that the reflectance sensors do in being able to get intensive, spatially intensive color data over large fields. And the problem with those has been time. Satellite has been completely out of the ballpark as far as being timely. Airplanes can work, but to say we're going to send an airplane because we decided we need to make a decision today, The airplane may take too long to get there. It's a real problem. But Planet Labs is now saying that they're going to get the whole land surface. They're saying that by second quarter of 2016, there will be 1 to 3 day return on all of North America. That's what the website still says. I don't know how they're doing in far the progress of having the satellites built. I know they have the launch contract signed. But that could change everything as far as using imagery, because you don't have to send something there. You just look for yesterday's picture, and that may make it viable. So thank you very much, everyone. And Dave will tell you if I have time for questions.